We've come a long way, but we've got a long way to go. We've come from Africa, where life in this world began. We blacks were the first human beings on this earth. But we've also come from slavery, that ungodly system that denied human rights to black people. Slavery goes back thousands of years to Hebrews, Greeks, Romans, Babylonians, Vikings, Africans, and others. But these slaves were not always black, and this early slavery had rules. You couldn't just do anything you wanted to a slave. A slave had rights. But when slavery came to America, it became a peculiar institution. It was sanctioned by the Constitution and approved by the church and the whole American society. If money became short, masters sold slaves at auctions, separating husbands from wives, children from mothers. Women endured the sexual advances of white men. Infants suffered malnutrition, and the elderly were neglected. A white man could beat or rape a woman, any slave woman, at any time, anybody's mother, anybody's sister, anybody's grandmother. When slavery was abolished, blacks were still prevented from owning land, from serving on juries, from voting, from traveling as they desired, or just making decisions for themselves. As leadership came on the scene, Booker T. Washington, W.E.B. Du Bois, Frederick Douglass, Harriet Tubman, and others, blacks were determined to live a better life. It took years of a bloody civil war to end slavery, but another wall stood in our way, segregation. And with segregation, thousands of lynchings and blacks being railroaded into southern jails and northern prisons. We've come a long way. The 1930s economic depression, when jobs became available, they went to whites first, and what was left went to blacks. During World War I, many Afro-Americans in the South migrated north for defense jobs, and many saw the armed forces as a refuge, as it was desegregated in the 1940s. Education of black children was clearly inferior to that of white children. In 1954, we had the Brown versus Board of Education decision by the Supreme Court of the United States, and yet segregation in public schools lived on. Blacks of the South still could not vote, could not eat, swim, drink, nor go to the bathroom in the same facilities as whites. Leaders were threatened and leaders were murdered by the Ku Klux Klan, and our government did nothing. And then it happened. In my young life, a boy about my age, Emmett Till, in Money, Mississippi, was killed. He was 15 years old. He went to Mississippi to visit his uncle for the summer. He either whistled or said, "Hey, baby," to a white woman in a store and left. And for this, a group of white men, including the lady's husband, two nights later came to get him at his uncle's house. They beat him, shot him in the head, and tied a 75-pound cotton-drying fan around his body with barbed wire and threw him in the Tallahatchie River. I can still see his swollen face and gouged-out eye on the front of the Jet magazine. It caught my attention as a 15-year-old myself. Could this happen to me? It was already happening to me. It was tearing my heart out. I was losing faith in my country. Where was justice and mercy? Where was the land of the free and the home of the brave? Why are so many blacks being killed all over the country? Was the Constitution written for me? I took these questions with me to college and seminary from 1954 to 1961. The festering rot of 200 years of oppression and discrimination came to a head in the 1960s. A man had a dream. He said, "I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together at a table of brotherhood. I have a dream that my four children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today." Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s dream speech inspired the nation. But 3 years before the speech, student sit-ins had spread across the nation. Thousands were involved in sit-ins, marches, boycotts, stand-ins, picketing, or direct nonviolent action. Thousands of black and white people of all ages, elementary, high school, and colleges as well, street people, participated as freedom fighters. My experience in the civil rights movement went all over the country, having been arrested in 5 states. But most of those 50 years of a struggle have occurred in Southwest Georgia, some 190 miles due south of Atlanta. We worked in some 20 counties doing voter registration and education and direct action. Some 3,000 people went to jail while participating in peaceful demonstrations. Many houses and churches of movement supporters were burned to the ground. There were no fruitful negotiations. We learned what white power really meant, and we continued the struggle. Though we have many successes to show, socially and politically, where decisions are made economically, boss is still boss. And my way of passing the torch to you, I want to make a few brief points. First of all, we must stay faithful. We who have fought for freedom believe that God is on our side. God has held our hand through the many encounters with death. I have heard and felt the wind from a death bullet coming by my ear. I have seen 16 officers of the so-called law with pistols and shotguns and long flashlights break into our voting meeting place in the church. But they left only 2 slashed tires and a broken windshield on a night I thought that was my time to die. I've heard many times, "Nigga, don't you know I'll blow your brains out with a gun aimed at my head?" Many, many times. God has protected me from death for 73 years because I'm faithful. I'm still faithful. Secondly, we must reclaim our schools and our neighborhoods. the racketeers and drug culture are using our boys and seducing our girls at early ages. Listen to a death knell. 80% of our boys drop out of high school. 1 out of 8 black males between 25 and 29 have been jailed already. 1,000 black children are arrested every day. The number one cause of death for our children is homicide. We are losing a whole generation of children right before our eyes to an outlawed drug culture. Don't say we are puzzled. We know where they live. We know where they party. We know which schools they work in. And we know which policemen support them. And we know which judges and lawyers are their backbone. Somebody here has got to lay down their life for our children. We must not give them our children. We must not give up our future. Then we must find a way to leverage the $900 billion we spend on consumables each and every year. We spend more than the gross national product of many countries. And what do we own together? Where is the company? Where is the university? Where is the hospital or network or land that we own together? 10 years ago, we held in group ownership a nonprofit organization called New Communities Incorporated. We farmed it for 17 years. We held on to it for that number of years. And then we had 5 straight years of drought. Then we had a 3-year fight with USDA just to get the right to get loans for drought. With all around us, plantations, all kinds of plantations that we proved were getting loans. And they were saying that since we're a corporation, we're not an individual. We're not a farmer. But it took us 3 years to win that fight. Then 4 more years of late payments from USDA caused us to lose this land. We appealed to hundreds of black and white groups to save the land, $250 an acre to save 6,000 acres, looking for 6,000 people to give $250 to save 6,000 acres of land, the largest piece of land owned by blacks in the country anywhere in a single tract. Muslims own more land than we did, but not in a single tract. We lost that 6,000 acres in 1985 and sued the federal government because we were faithful and had good lawyers. We won a large sum of money so that New Communities could live again and will live again. A large sum of money. A large sum of money. So that New Communities, a project to stabilize southern farmers, to create a food delivery system from the south to our people in the north, and to participate creatively in an international trade were our 3 objectives. So that possibility is yet alive. young people, you will be making more money than we ever dreamed of. Please find a way. Find a way that we can trust each other so that our monies can work for our total liberation. We have ideas, inventions, athletic talent, but our labor and our monies and our contracts usually end up in white folks' hands and pockets. When will we trust our own? When will we feel responsible to save ourselves? Finally, we must stop the white man and his Uncle Tom from stealing our elections. We must not be afraid to vote black, and we must not be afraid to turn a black out who votes against our interests. We got to stay tough and take the time to communicate from day to day and door to door. We must reason and meet some more. Our people will listen if we come close enough, long enough for them to hear. In a few days or weeks, the FCC will announce that we won a full power community owned radio station in Albany, Georgia. Result of years of work. Tears that we've shed so many times when the TV and the newspaper comes out the day of an election or the day before an election and tell white folk all over wherever we're running somebody for an office that blacks are going to take this office over and thousands are coming to the polls and you got to get it. But we had no means of communicating with our people. So it's a blessing that finally we will have a radio station to cover thousands of people. Last thing I want to say before I sit is the greatest challenge that I've had in the movement is dealing with fear. Like he preempted me there, dealing with fear with our people. People who had their backs down and they talked to, there's a white person that's sitting right here. He was saying, "Miss, would you want me to go to the left or would you want me to go to the right? Or should I take the wood and place it on the back?" Never looking at the lady, but with her head straight down at the floor. This is the kind of attitude, the kind of people, the kind of fear that our people had when I first went to Albany, Georgia. But the young people had not known Massa. They hadn't seen any beatings. They didn't know nobody who got pistol whipped. And they weren't afraid of nobody, including their mom and daddy. And so, but the thing I learned was that when they got in jail, when the children got in jail, whoa now, buddy. Yeah, folks would go downtown, "Mr. Johnson, sir, you got my little man there. And I think I need her to be home." These are, in other words, don't mess with my children. You can mess with me, but don't mess with my children. And that stood them up. And it took us a little while to understand and to learn that. But then there's another point that all of us who in organizing, and this will include you one day, may have already included you. The fear that comes with you making a decision that will affect your pocketbook, or making a decision that will affect your family, or making a decision that is going to affect you in some way. That fear. Now I had to deal with the fear of death. Fear of dying. Now, all those years, I didn't think about dying. Never thought of it. Raised up in Petersburg, Virginia, and sang all over Virginia with a police boys club. So I had good relation with police. I thought police were here to help you. But after getting smacked a few times and knocked upside the head with a pistol and hit jabbed in my side and other things done to me, I started to fear police power. And fear, because every time, you know, they wouldn't let me down. All the time they're watching me, every day, coasting behind me when I'm driving. Every time I pick up a telephone, nigga, don't you know you're gonna die? And then when I get married, nigga, I'm gonna kill your family. Now that wrecks you. You gotta have something to deal with that. I said, Lord, I can't make no decision with me shaking like this. I can't deal with it, Lord. And I can't tell you the day, and I can't tell you the hour. But one day, in one early hour, I was able to look one sheriff in his face without the fear that I heretofore had had. And boy, then I was bad. Because no more did I have fear of death. It came from me, it came from my religion. From a scripture I want you to read when you go home. I'm not going to preach. But I'm going to take this text. It's the 8th chapter of Romans. The 8th chapter of Romans, about the 38th verse, where it says, "For I am persuaded that neither life, nor death, nor principalities, nor power, nor things above the earth, nor things under the earth, shall be able to separate me from the love of Christ." And I read that scripture. I was in prison. I was in prison in South Carolina, on the chain gang. Had gone through a lot of difficulty. They had been trying to get us out of jail, and we were trying to stay in jail. But they did some bad things to us then, but when I read that scripture in jail, a whole new world opened for me. And I was no longer afraid of dying or of death. For me to live is Christ, and to die is gain. But you don't have to die. But you have to make a decision. I wish you'd make that decision today. That you're going to take the torch that I'm passing to you right now. Now, I'm not stopping working. I'm not saying I'm going to stop working. I'm not going to stop working till they kill me. They're going to have to kill me to get me out of here. With my wife and with my children, that was our greatest challenge. What they were saying about my own, well, some Ku Klux Klan went to my house one day. My wife was in the house in a slip and pregnant. They were looking for me. But when they left, they approached her and then she screamed and they left her. But when they left the house was burning. We had 15 people staying at the house. So that told us one thing, we should not ever try to stay together, but we stayed together like that because of economics. We didn't have no money. Supposed to get $10 a week from SNCC, but mine never came. They owe me. So, in conclusion, just want to say that to stay faithful, I'm asking you to take this as your own commitment to stay faithful, to reclaim our neighborhoods, leverage our money, and finally use our political strength. But we who believe in freedom cannot rest until it comes. Thank you.